She's nothing like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly and makes you shine like you never could alone. And
hey, everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian Williams and Nisha coming to you live every single day talking about HR. And, William, I think we need to pick a date, and let's bury that music. The opening music has to go away. It's painful. So
it's got to be – it's Brian, it's got to go this week. I'll tell you what. We'll flip a coin, but it's got to go.
It does. That hurts. I mean – That really truly hurts deep. It's real and it's deep. It's got to go away. It kind of makes me sad. So I don't need any more of that. Hey man, let's get to our guests because they got some good stuff going on here. Zachary, Todd, both on the show, guys. Hope you're doing well today. Welcome.
Thank you, Zachary, and I am. I was doing better before that music, but I think I can get over it.
Yeah, it tugs at you. There's no two ways about it. So, let's get rolling. I want to hear what you guys got going on. So, Zachary, if you would introduce yourself, Todd, after that, and then we'll jump into what's top of mind.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Happy to be on the show today, Zachary Misko. I am the Vice President of Workforce Strategy for Kelly Outsourcing Consulting Group, the outsourcing consulting group within Kelly Services. Been with them for about 11 years, and just kind of in a nutshell, what does Workforce Strategy Vice President mean? I connect and work with HR leaders across the globe to develop workforce solutions to meet their needs and the needs they have in the company. So within that is managing our recruitment process outsourcing group and managing the recruitment and talent acquisition function within companies across the globe.
Great. And Todd Wheatland and I work with the same organization, Zachary. So I'm the head of marketing for Kelly OCG, and I'm also the head of thought leadership overall for Kelly Services.
Genius. And guys, you all have an extensive background in obviously in recruiting and HR. So normally what we ask is, what's keeping you up at night? What's top of mind for you these days? But I would like to actually focus in on the top of mind, because you all have just created a fantastic book for the community. So, Zachary, while we start there, what is the book about? For you, when it gets right down to it, what is the book about? And bring the audience into the book, and then Todd, you can follow on after that.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. It's called The New Rules of Recruiting. And recently did a soft launch, they have some exciting and fun things planned for official launch in May. But we wrote the book in two reasons. One, we've got some great best practices and research. The companies that I have the opportunity to work with every day at Kelly Services, we not only teach and help them to better acquire talent, develop the recruitment strategies that make them successful, but we're learning every day from them. We take all that information that we're sharing from our customers across the globe. We take what we learn through industry events and through some of the research that we do, and we go, gosh, we've got all this great information to share. Let's not just share it with our customers. Let's share it with everybody and give them an idea and an understanding of how do we feel the rules of recruitment have changed. And I think the fundamental aspect of recruitment in matching the right person in the right job, that still exists today, and that's what the role of recruitment was 20 years ago when I started in the HR industry. But there are a lot of new rules that impact how we recruit, and maybe more appropriately, new tools. So you'll see a lot of some of the things we talk about are social recruiting and content marketing and culture branding, which is a big one. And also things like, what is your candidate experience? So thinking on the flip side. So during and post that recruitment function or time, what's the candidate experience? And well the traditional aspects. So it's not just what are you hearing about what's important or what are the latest trends, but I think that we've gotten away from communication, which in my opinion is a core competency that recruiters need to have and should continue to develop. And so this book talks a little bit about that traditional, and in kind of a funny way we talk, you know, is the resume dead? And it's not so much, again, not so much that the resume is dead, but it's changed, it's evolved, and what how we define that resume and what a resume looks like today is just very different than it was 20 years ago. And so we take you back to the old school days of traditional recruitment, tried and true methods that worked in person, and talk about career fairs, talk about print ads. We talk about how do you engage in communication as a recruiter and develop that as a skill to ensure that you're effectively writing the material you need to recruit, as well as properly closing the candidate, managing counter offers, et cetera. And then we talk about all the latest and greatest exciting stuff, like I mentioned, in terms of social recruiting, content marketing, and culture branding. So I just happened to be out in Vegas at the Sherm Talent Management Conference. So certainly, as I've gone through the last day and a half, talent acquisition, recruitment, huge topic here, and even more great stuff that I've got written down and in my head now that I've got to take back to the drawing board as well.
Wow, that's a description that's even longer than the book. The only thing I would add to that very extensive, and I do agree with everything Zachary says, of course, but I think a really cool thing I think that both Zachary and I really wanted to explore in the book is both of us, I also started as a recruiter and have migrated into the marketing world, and I'm fascinated by this. I think there's a higher level of tension now between HR and marketing than there ever has been, and I see that from both sides, and I think that there's this history or legacy with both HR and marketing that they've been viewed historically in very similar ways by the CEO. There's, you know, every major C-suite sort of survey in the recent decades sort of indicates that HR and marketing have both had this being seen as increasingly important to the success of a company, but that the fulfillment or the confidence in those resources to actually deliver on the strategic importance was plummeting at the same time. And then a few years ago, I think what's happened is that marketing actually hit onto a few things that actually has really revolutionized a lot of the way marketing in many companies is seen. It has managed to start to talk in more business language that C-suite appreciates. It's more tied to business success, business outcomes. And those sorts of lessons, I think, are really those that smart HR organizations now are tapping into, those same sorts of approaches. And we've tried to distill that down to a recruiter level and looked at, especially in the social play and the communication play, how can, in this social world, how can a recruiter take advantage of those same communication methods and try to optimize that from a recruitment perspective. So we're sort of bouncing around between that whole HR marketing dynamic.
Nice. Guys, if you had all the power in the world and you could sunset some things that we do in recruiting, let's just take the old rules of recruiting as kind of the backdrop. What would be the one or two things you would just love to see sunset in, either a process or kind of a habit that we have, et cetera? And Todd, let's start with you. But the idea is just, if you could just wave your wand and something that we do that just irritates the heck out of you could be gone, what would that be?
Gee, well, from a personal perspective, as someone who's like many of us, I'm sure, who's approached through, say, let's use LinkedIn as an example. So I get a lot of approaches on LinkedIn by recruiters who clearly have absolutely no idea or haven't done any research or are contacting so many people at the same time that they really have got no relationship or causal connection with me whatsoever. So they haven't. There's been no attempts to establish a credibility. And I think that's sort of one-off, totally, disingenuous approaching method. That totally gets my goat. It'd have to be a phenomenal opportunity that I would overlook such an ignorance of approach. Yet I see it happening. In fact, I feel it's accelerating still because the tools that are there now enable that sort of spam at a much higher level than ever before. So spam still gets my top vote.
Zachary, what about you?
Yeah, so two things. First of all, that, you know, I'd say don't believe the hype. And what I mean by that is I think that some recruiters, some companies get so caught up in the what they think is the latest and greatest, and they invest, put all their eggs in baskets, say, oh, my gosh, Twitter, my boss or someone just told a story about it, and now, so now we need to be there. And I focus and drive all my energy onto this one tool because of some hype or something about that tool. And I think, again, it goes back to that diverse toolbox that a recruiter needs to have to successfully develop a sourcing plan and recruitment strategy. So that's on the one side. Then putting it back more candidate focused as well, which I think is probably the most important thing to think about from a process standpoint. When you look at the recruitment process within your organization, I just think in so many cases it's designed to meet the policies and the standards and the rules within the company. We're not thinking with the end result in mind and that hire and the candidates that we're touching throughout the process. So being able to take a step back and find out where do we have redundancies? Where are we making the candidates do things two and three times? Where are we where can we eliminate steps that just don't make sense or unnecessary? And I think that's the real key, is just taking a step back. And I'm always surprised, one of the first things I do when I engage in a conversation with a recruiter, with someone in HR, is they say, well, so tell me about when was the last time you applied to a job at your company? And it's amazing that it is either I did right after I started working here and I've been here for 3 years, or, gosh, I've never actually done that, but I set it up and I wrote it so I know what it looks like. But they haven't gone through that experience. So that's always one of the first things I like to do when I'm learning about or engaging in a conversation with a company. And I always stress that, you know, even if you've done it once, do it every 3, do it every 4 months, do it every 6 months. Keep on top of what frustrates you when you're doing it. What takes most time. And then a tool that I've used successfully is just engaging and using lean methodology in the recruitment process. And, you know, you think of lean on a manufacturing floor and how it makes the manufacturing process flow more smoothly. It eliminates waste, redundancy, it improves customer service. Lean is a great methodology to use on a business process like recruitment. And different HR processes as well. And it's a great tool specifically utilizing value stream mapping and looking at what is our current state, what do we want our future state to be, and how do we get there? And oftentimes you can do that, and there's no cost to do that. It's just about how do we think differently and how do we ensure that the customer is satisfied, that customer being our hiring managers and our candidates ultimately.
Nice. Hey, guys, this is Brian. Direct this question, start with, into Todd. So as you look at the recruitment or talent acquisition process, you have a lot of companies now who are starting to recruit over people from the domain experience. Like they're pulling a programmer over into the recruiting function or an engineer over to the recruiting function versus having the just kind of somebody come through the HR process. What are thoughts on that being the future of recruiting, is having an expert actually in a domain be the one doing the recruiting?
Well, I think it's probably – I'm sure there are many pros and cons you could list. On the pro side, I'm definitely highly in favor of that model. I think it speaks to the type of – maybe even the issue I just raised before in terms of it establishes credibility automatically if I can look at a recruiter's profile and see that they understand my space even before we've connected. So even if an approach from that recruiter is fairly clumsy, they can have some latent credibility based on just their job history or what I can see of their background. I think it also plays into these broader social media trends of, you know, the need for companies to be transparent, the need for people to be genuine, the need for people to add value. And someone can definitely add value in a community if they have knowledge of that community. So if someone's going to be blogging, for example, in the engineering space, it's obviously going to help a lot for their credibility and probably for the content quality if they can actually draw on personal experience and expertise. So I'm a big fan of the model you just described. I'd be interested if anyone else wants to throw in some of the drawbacks to that as well.
Thanks. Zachary?
Yeah, I think absolutely it's a that that is an important and I think can be a very good thing to do. And part of it is isn't necessarily a new thing or something that we've just started doing. But because of this wireless intercollaborated world we live in and the fact that people and life has changed so much, we've become more transparent in how and why and when we do things. People are more on the go. This, the aspect of social relevance is greater than ever before. So we see these things more easily, and we see and know where the R&D folks hang out. So if I'm a biotechnology company and I'm a recruiter working to engage and blog, and the whole aspect of, you know, content marketing and bridging marketing with recruitment, if I want to actively take part in that conversation, I probably need to have some skills and be able to talk about, for example, biotechnology. So if I can't talk about bioluminescence and proteomics and genomics and some of the different cool things that are happening in my company from an R&D perspective, I'm probably not going to engage and excite the R&D folks that are out there that are potential candidates or that I'm trying to attract to come work for my company. So but I think we're seeing it more because there is easier access to get involved and engaged and be a part of conversations virtually today to do that. But I think it's not anything new. And I remember 15 years ago setting up a science for the non-scientist class and engaging, not necessarily hiring some of the scientists in as recruiters in a previous life when I was managing a biotechnology company, but utilizing them to do some job shadowing and to spend some time based on R&D and scientific positions that were open with my recruiters and or directly with candidates. So I think it's a great idea, and I think people are embracing it more and more because of what the technology and some of the tools enable us to do in that space.
Nice. Guys, if candidates had a Bill of Rights, i.e. two or three things that we all held holy and or dear, what would be the elements of a candidate's Bill of Rights? And Todd, let's start with you. Just one or two things off the cuff that you think all candidates deserve.
I would say they deserve to be responded to. That would be a fundamental, every candidate should receive a response to an application. I would say probably somewhere further down the path, possibly even feedback on you know, why, if they're requesting specifics around perhaps why they didn't get successful, weren't successful for a role. It's a great question, guys. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would start with feedback, and everyone gets some type of response. And also, for me, how they get better. So it's not just enough that we send them some type of auto response. We got your stuff. It's we've evaluated your stuff. You're here. You could be here if you did this, this, and this, et cetera. So it's the feedback, but it's feedback that also makes them better as opposed to just giving them something closed loop. Zachary, what about yourself? If we had a candidate's Bill of Rights, what would it look like?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. And I remember San Francisco, I think it was in January, there's a panel. And I remember if you were on the panel, I was going to say maybe you were facilitating. I think you were on the panel. And this similar question came up to this. And I'm not going to try to create something new just to be different. I think Todd's spot on, and that's exactly what we heard in January with the panel of experts. It all comes back to communication. And so as a candidate, if you engage me and excite me to begin to go through this process, let me know in advance, what is that process going to look like? If I apply today, how long is it going to take me? Oh, you know, you can apply in 2 minutes. And then after that, what's going to happen? Am I going to hear next steps? So I have to come in for an interview? Is there going to be an assessment test you're going to send me a link to? And just being very communicative so that people feel good about knowing, okay, what am I jumping into here? And when they disqualify or they no longer are in that process, are we communicating back to let them know that they're not in that process and they don't just fall into that black hole? And I think there was a lawyer who gave a talk about hiring practices and where's she sees the majority of the claims happen involving a candidate who's been part of the hiring process. And 90% of the time, she said it's because of failed communication or the lack of communication. And if communication had been present during that process, there probably wouldn't have been any problem at all, or we wouldn't have gotten to the point where we're having a lawsuit or these silly discussions today, because it just all centers and comes back to communication.
Brian, what about
Go
ahead. Sorry,
Todd. I think William, your point on the company's obligation or the employer's obligation to provide that level of feedback, I think that gets into some really interesting legal questions. And I'm wondering what sort of tool-based, you know, like automated sounds like an ugly word, but I wonder as tools get better and the predictive nature of the databases gets better, whether or not there is some nice functionality that can arise that can help give some form of guidance in terms of missing components of education or experience.
Yeah, William, on the kind of the hand of Bill of Rights, the one thing that I think is just grossly missing is the fact that companies communicate to candidates in the process that they will be asking for feedback on the candidate process and then actually do it and communicate that the whole way through so that that candidate always has the fact that they will get their voice heard some way, somehow. I think that alone would probably change the nature of how poor the candidate experience is currently.
Nice. Well, you know, it's funny, we could wrap all of our responses up into the umbrella of expectation management, setting expectations, being transparent, and clearly communicating, et cetera. Well, we have about 10 minutes left, guys, and got a couple questions. One of them is, do you think we overthink and or overhype compliance? And recruitment compliance in particular. Zachary, let's start with you. What's your thoughts on the world of compliance as opposed to the fear that we all succumb to in some ways?
Yeah, I think in some cases, absolutely. I think that, what was it, 6-8 years ago, the regulations as updated for U.S. In terms of OCCP did scare a lot of people. And so they were less apt to do there were a lot of things that they thought, oh, we used to do this, but we can't anymore. And even before they found out or determined exactly how we need to respond to these new regulations, they just stopped. So I think it did. People had to take 4 steps back, and then as they started learning, they gradually got back to where they were. So they understood, how do I need to post and write? How do I write job descriptions? Can I post an evergreen position? Or if it's not technically open, maybe I can't post that now because OCCP says that I can't do that. And, I used to just review those that came in the first couple days, but is that legal now? And I get scared and I don't know what to do. So, you know, remember when the regs came out, people were using data management techniques to review applications. When they're a federal contractor, had to follow OCCP, they do that. And a DMT, as they call it, it can be anything. You could say, as long as I'm consistent, I'm going to pick every 7th candidate. I'm going to pick and just look at candidates with the last name S. As long as you applied and consistently used that DMT, the Reich said, that's okay, because it's a non-biased approach to sorting through and looking at resumes. And you actually, how ridiculous is that? You actually had companies doing that because they just, as these regs came out, they were overwhelmed and underconfident in how do I proceed and interpret these as a company. So you saw, now instead of recruitment and marketing come together, legal and HR working very closely together to very quickly review, understand, and interpret how they were going to respond to and utilize the new regs. So it's been an interesting ride. It continues to be. And I think more people have it figured out, and it's become more just a part of what we need to do and not driving people crazy or preventing them from doing their jobs.
Nice. Todd, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a lot specifically to add. I mean, the thing that comes to my mind is the parallel between that sort of compliance and even social media compliance. So we talk a lot in the book about social media, obviously, but it's the typical default reaction in if you like, phase one or phase two of social media becoming a big thing was for the legal department to take the lead role in drafting a very complete, let's say, list of things thou shalt not do on social media as an employee. And, of course, the result is that everyone just shuts up because they're too scared, because they don't understand. They default believe that they're just not empowered to act. And as the phases or as the sophistication of companies' actions in social media takes over, and you can see that a lot of companies are reversing those sorts of policies, greatly simplifying things and actually trying to empower their people to act, because in the absence of in the absence of being told they can't do anything, then people tend to just be quiet and think that the rules stop them from acting like people. And that's when you start to have these sort of communication breakdowns, perhaps we referred to before.
Nice. Guys, in researching for the book, The New Rules for Recruiting, I want to talk to you about the world of pre-screening. What have y'all seen in the world of like skills assessment and personality assessment and background check and background screening and things like that? Has anything significantly changed from the old rules of recruiting to the new rules of recruiting? And Zachary, we'll start with you. What's your take on that world, that pre-screening world?
Touch on it real quickly here. I think it's still absolutely a part of the recruitment process, and you see everything from pre-employment assessments that are conducted even before an interview to pre-employment tests still being given in pen and paper form in some aspects in some companies. I see that a lot in the customer service world. And I think with technology, I guess the bad news is, I guess they're still all there, and I don't know that everyone understands how to properly utilize them or where I should put them in the funnel, right? So if I'm starting with 10,000 people and I'm funneling down to those five I may interview and ultimately that one that I may hire, you know, where do I insert them into the process in terms of those pre-employment assessments based on cost, and where am I going to remove or disqualify or continue to funnel down to those best match candidates. And I think people still struggle with that. So that's the bad news. Unfortunately, the good news is that I think so much of the technology enables automation within the process, but there are some really great and cool new ways to be able to do that and apply pre-employment assessments and checks throughout the process. Thanks.
Nice. The probably the big thing, you know, that I want to get, we've got about 3 minutes, 3 minutes left, guys, is what's probably the one thing that you drew inspiration from in co-authoring the book and kind of what you do, you've been doing it a long time, that you can share to our listeners? What's the one thing in recruitment that they can do differently starting today to make the biggest impact? And let's Todd, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, this is a very empowering era for a lot of roles, and I think recruiters is definitely one of those. I think if you see yourself as a recruitment professional, we spoke a little bit before about domain expertise or coming from a particular sector, there really is huge potential with the tools available to really define yourself as a thought leader, as someone who has an opinion, someone who has a network of peers, who's someone who can, you know, be the hub of a marketplace connecting the demand of organizations to the supply of talent. I think the tools are there for people to step up in a way that was in a personal way, not just a company way, but in a personal way that just wasn't available to them 3 or 4 years ago. And that it continues to accelerate. And I think the whole concept of, if you like, a recruiting organization, its employees, that is the recruiters, and their relative networks and the content that's shared between those things, there's huge opportunities for someone to really redefine the nature of a recruiter, which is someone who is helping the marketplace, who is adding value every day or every week, rather than just dipping in like a raider trying to take advantage of some talent for a specific need and then disappearing again without adding value long term.
Perfect. Zachary?
Hey, two words on that, and I've said it before, candidate experience. I think so many great things about that, but focusing on the candidate experience and that end product being the hire, thinking of it in a customer service aspect, that just beginning with the end in mind, it allows you to do so many great things to improve the process, to create better strategies when you're actively engaged in that experience, you're listening to your customer. I think that's the key. And, you know, one of the great things about this book is it's given me an opportunity to speak and talk to different HR communities and different conferences about the new rules of recruiting and the fact that plugging into talent will fry your mind if you don't understand how to properly do it and so easily overwhelms you. And at the end, we've done a workshop where we say, what's your favorite way to recruit, whether it's a website or a job fair or a place you've gone or a tool you've used, and tell us one of your best stories. And we've gotten so many great ones. Todd and I are excited. We're putting that together in the New Rules of Recruitment workbook that will be coming out later this year. And so if you have one to share and you're listening to this, love to hear it. Email, LinkedIn me, tweet me with your best recruitment method, tool, technique. We'd love to include it in the book and give you credit for dropping it on our desk too. So thanks.
Perfect. Guys, thanks. Zachary Misko, Todd Wheatland, for being on the show. Excited about the book and the message delivered today. Folks, we are out of here. We will talk to you tomorrow.